Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
And welcome to episode number 131 of the podcast God Beyond the Bible, the podcast made by seekers and for seekers. We are in our third week on the look at the book of Job and just our opinions. And before we dive into it, Trayson, we have some shout outs.
We do. Our shout outs this week are to Cookie, Quez, and Luke. We're glad to have you guys listening.
Thanks for listening. And our quote, of course, for this series is, everything happens for a reason, until it doesn't.
All right, so we've used the last two episodes to kind of set the stage for a closer look at what is considered to be one of the most difficult texts to make sense of, and that is the Old Testament book of Job. Due to time constraints, we're not going to be able to recap every point of the previous episode, so we strongly suggest that you listen to these in their proper order, and it might even be a good idea to re-listen to the previous episode each time before listening to the newly released one.
Yeah, they're short.
Yeah. All right, so sorry about that. I'd lost my place on the paper and couldn't find it again. Let us once more remind our listeners what we believe the book of Job is really about. And that is that Job, like many of us, was operating in a religion that he believed put him in a position with God to spare himself the heartaches, disappointments, and losses that others in the world often suffered. In short, Job was practicing a religion based on fear, the fear of loss. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and jump into the text.
And I'll just backdate you on that. We're saying that because he said that himself. Mm-hmm. The thing, yes, I have always feared has come to pass. It's happened.
Job 3:25.
Yeah, Job 3:25 is where that is. Okay, let's jump into the book of Job here. We're going to read Job 1:1. There once was a man named Job. Remember, we pointed out his name means hated and persecuted, who lived in the land of Uz. He was blameless, a man of complete integrity. He feared God, Elohim, the gods, and stayed away from evil.
Okay, so what do we see? A man who carefully practiced a religion motivated by fear. And this also was his motivation for avoiding doing anything that might be perceived as wrong. Let's stop right here and ask ourselves, can we relate to the life Job was living?
Yes.
Believing that service in our religion will win God's favor and insulate and isolate us from anything bad happening.
Now, let me go ahead and put in right here. Divine intervention happens.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I've had it to happen in my life. But divine intervention is not a result of our religious performance.
Right.
Because I've seen divine intervention, what I interpret as divine intervention, of people that really made no belief. I mean, just miraculously healed. Mm-hmm. Miraculously walk through a great adversity, mm-hmm, and come out the other side smelling like a rose.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We would call that almost,
yeah,
supernatural, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but see, this all we're doing is challenging our thought that our performance, our religious performance, somehow sways the divine in our favor.
Right.
And that's Job's big deal. He's finding out. He meticulously, and we're going to talk about that, he meticulously, it said this twice in there, it says he was blameless, a man of complete integrity. He feared God and stayed away from evil.
Well, and there's ego in it too, because I know, speaking of myself, I can't speak for you, but when you're doing all the right things and you're getting those life blessings and you're going, see, God's happy with me. I want everyone to see how blessed I am so they know how happy God is with me. And then it's kind of ego crushing when those tragedies come along and you're going, but I was doing all the things. And now everyone's going to think that I'm doing something wrong.
Well, you know what that did for me living my life like that is I was always waiting for the other shoe to fall. Everything's okay right now, but I know I'm going to misstep. Well,
it reminds me of a doctor that made a statement about he was going up in an elevator with a lady in Little Rock in one of the hospitals and said just politely, hey, how's your day? Well, I'm doing really good today, but I know when things are good, there's only one way they can go. Things are just going to get worse. And so now I'm worried about tomorrow.
Yeah. And isn't that terrible? And we've all lived like that at some point or another. To some degree, everyone's lived like that. So let's kind of dive back into Job. Verses 2 and 3 tell us that he had 10 children, a prosperous farm with lots of hired hands to work the family business. In fact, he was the wealthiest and the most prosperous individual in that particular region. So everybody kind of knew Job.
Right, yeah. Well, it seems evident that Job attributed his prosperity and the keeping and maintaining of that prosperity to the careful observance of his religious practices, which were to appease and please God, preserving his status and preventing loss. Does that sound familiar? Does anybody serve the religion out there that they're hedging their bets? And I'm making point. I never will forget. I watched an episode. You guys know I make no. I love the humor of Seinfeld. It's just It's some profound, just silly sometimes humor. But I remember Kramer made a statement. Jerry had bought his dad a new Cadillac. And Kramer said, oh, boy, you made some points with the big guy there.
Yep.
Yep. So verses 4 and 5 tell us that Job's children often threw parties that lasted for days. And at the end of those celebrations, out of fear that his children may have offended God, Job would get up early in the morning following these celebrations and offer burnt offerings on his children's behalf.
So obviously, Job also thought he was following that very peevish God as well. What if they said or did something last night or Saturday night and now God's angry and he's planning his revenge?
And we don't know if Job was doing this probably out of both. He may have been doing this thinking he was protecting his children.
Sure.
But maybe he was still protecting his own prosperity, which was linked to his children. Right, so right.
And we can really see ourselves in Job here.
Yeah.
Out of fear of offending God in any way, resulting in the thing he feared most, personal loss, Job would double down on the thing he had that he thought would protect him, his careful practice of his religion. It even felt like his practice of religion would cover his children's personal lack of enthusiasm for practicing their religion and avoid bringing down God's wrath. Does that sound familiar?
It does sound familiar, yes.
This might kind of be the equivalent of thinking that if we attend services 3 times a week instead of just once, that we're offsetting any chance of loss. And we might even throw an extra 20 in the offering plate or the mission fund to get a little extra insurance. Sure. We've become so programmed by our religion that we're not even giving a second thought to the act of putting money in the offering plate being referred to as giving to God.
We've all heard that said, right? Mm-hmm. And we're not attacking any of these things. We're talking about the motive behind why we're doing these things. That's all this was Job, of Job. It was his motive for why he did what he did. And his motives were all in error. Yeah. His motives were all wrong. And it was his religious motives that was really wrong. And I remember one time a lady in a church that I pastored, and she took off a weekend and they went to Tunica. And if you're from America, in this area, you know, Tunica is where you went to gamble. That was and she went to Tunica. And when she kept that weekend, I think she missed church that week. And they got back, and that in a week or two, her son-in-law and daughter had a motorcycle accident. And the first thing she said was, I knew I shouldn't have gone down there. That happened because I went to
Tunica. Oh, my goodness.
Tunica. Wow. Now, it shows you we haven't evolved in our religion too far from the very almost mythological type of serving God. I don't even know where we are.
Six.
Yeah. Is me? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sometimes it really helps to know the plot before we read the story. Remember the plot? Practicing a religion to appease God and avoid loss. Experiencing a faith crisis and having to question the whole premise of that religion when we suffer loss anyway. And the final result is abandoning that religious approach that knows about God. That's what religion is, right?
Yes.
That knows about God and talks about God. That's what religion does. And instead, finding true spirituality, which is knowing God, knowing the character of God personally for yourself.
It's the next few verses that renders this whole story so enigmatic. To be honest, we probably all read the remainder of the book of Job somewhat distracted by this scene of the Lord sort of allowing Job to be a pawn in behind the scenes debate with Satan about Job's religious blamelessness and integrity. Even sort of wagering, if you will, that Job wouldn't break under the strain of loss. Usually this distraction causes the reader to fail to consider that the issue wasn't whether Job would continue his futile practice of religion, but whether he would actually curse the Lord to his face. In other words, abandon his belief in the Most High by refusing to acknowledge his existence. We know that Job never did question the existence of God, but he did, however, question God's methods when they did not reflect Job's image of God according to his religion of just do everything right and nothing but good will come to you and you will never suffer loss. This is precisely how many still believe God works today in spite of the clear message that it is not.
Now the verses that have, for many, rendered the book of Job confusing and unknowable or even of no real value. Many failed to realize that a profound change in the way Job thought of and viewed God is the lesson to be learned here. We get really caught up in these ideas of, well, I'm going to be honest, I've spent most of my time dwelling on this sort of idea of, well, if he was such a rich guy, what was, you know, and how did he know about what was going on in heaven? And how did he write all of this down? And how, and I totally miss actually happening in the story.
We're better off if we look at this story somewhat as a legendary parable.
Yeah.
That gets told and gets passed down.
This is, am I wrong that Job was included in the books that are sectioned off
as poetic? Poetry, and, yeah, it's poetry. Okay. Because it's written in true poetic style. Right. And anybody that reads it, especially that reads it in the Hebrew, realizes this is a story.
When you read the opening line, it's very much a once upon a time.
It does, yeah.
There once was a man named Job. Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's setting you up as a long, long time ago.
That's a long ways from back in 1763.
Exactly. Exactly.
Once means just somewhere.
In the past.
In the past, yeah. I don't know how far. Well, let's look at verses 6 through 12. The ones that give us all of the problems. And actually, I think cloud the book of Job for us because it's right at the beginning of the book.
Yes.
And it just blows right in on us. Mm-hmm. And we spend the rest of the book of Job trying to sort out the book of Job according to this scene that we don't even know how this scene took place. We don't know who had this vision of this scene or how it even relates to the story. Or was it just a poetic way of explaining what God was doing when all this is going on? I think the latter. But anyway, we read in these verses how the Lord holds a meeting of the heavenly host, sometimes referred to as divine counsel. In fact, we released a podcast on divine counsel. And the obstacles that confounds us is the fact that the being we know as Satan is present. Not only is he present, he's speaking with and dealing directly with the Lord Jehovah. Now keep in mind that whoever wrote this story does not reveal to us how they received this. And we don't even know who it was that wrote it, but how they received, they didn't reveal to us how they received this information of what took place. Was it by dream, vision, or divine inspiration? Or is this perhaps a work of a poetic literature where the writer inserts this heavenly scene to give the story another layer of depth that it wouldn't have without it?
And, you know, we formed entire doctrines around things like, well, we know that in Job's time, which should have been probably before Moses, that Satan was allowed in heaven then, and we believe that he can't go to heaven now, and we've formed over a story.
I find two things very interesting, and this has stuck with me doing this study. One is that almost every time that you hear about the divine counsel, is Satan not present most
always
every time?
Is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting to me. Is he one of the plural gods?
Well, I'm going to tell you something very personally, and I tell people this all the time. Satan is our mind. It's right in our own mind. Mm-hmm. That's the opposer.
Yeah.
That's why the word, one of the translations of it means to oppose oneself.
Yeah.
All of that opposition, where does it come? Right,
well,
in our mind.
Ourselves.
Our spirit can tell us one thing,
But then our mind starts telling us, because our mind has observed all, and our mind starts see our mind. We call it the devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. That is our mind.
I was going to bring up that, for lack of better phrasing, let's say that there is an actual divine council with maybe these head god, you know, Lord of the gods, and then these lesser gods or whomever. Uh-huh. Do you think that Satan is one specific person, or the possibility that it's whoever happens to be playing, for lack of better phrasing, the devil's advocate during that meeting?
Yeah.
And going, no, I don't know that this is the, you know.
I want to ask one more question, and this is something I thought of when I was reading this morning. How much different would we read this story, first of all, if this wasn't in there?
Well, we'd be reading about a very tragic...
If we didn't have this inserted in there to sway the way we see this story, think about it. If you just took out that verses 6 through 12 where we see God bargaining with Satan, mm-hmm, over Job, let's say we didn't have that. And we're going to have to, and we'll talk about this too, but we're going to have to assume Job didn't have this information.
No, and you know, as a
even kid, if this is a real story, Job did not have this information that he looked up and he saw that, oh, well, this is God doing this. All Job had to deal with was the facts of reality, and that's all we have to deal with. That's all we have to look at. We can't glance over into the divine and see what God's doing on the other side, how he fits in all of it. But that's what we try to do with religion. We try to fit God in. Well, this is what God has in all of this.
And this is going to sound very immature, but as a kid reading this, I walked that fine line of, okay, I want to please God, but I don't want him to think I'm so strong that he can just take everything from me and test me. And honestly, I mean, that's how
that is a thought to be considered. Yeah.
Okay. So what does help us is the fact that there is another similar event recorded in 1 Kings chapter 22.
And we forget this one all the time.
Yeah. We talked about it in the podcast, the Divine Council.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In this passage, the subject was King Ahab, and how he might be enticed to go to battle so that he would die and be removed as king of Israel. The event is said to be witnessed in a vision of the prophet Micaiah. Mm-hmm. I hope I said that right.
That's right.
According to this account, a spirit steps forward and offers a solution that consists of putting a lying spirit in the mouths of Ahab's prophets, telling him that he will win the war, when in reality he will die in the war. In this case, the Lord agrees that it will work and tells the spirit to go ahead with the plan. And this is found in 1 Kings 22, verses 19 through 22. But it's best just to read the entire chapter of 1 Kings 22.
Yes, you can kind of get an idea of what's
going on. A lot of people glaze right over that, but that's another very enigmatic...
It is.
...writing.
So the Council of God is also referred to in Psalms chapter 82, verse 1, where it reads, God presides over heaven's court. Also, there seems to be one of these meetings, as we mentioned in Genesis, over Adam's eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, when the Lord says, what shall we do now that the man has eaten of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and has become as one of us? This question of the future of humanity is brought up again at the construction of the Tower of Babel, where the question is brought up again of what do we do since man has accomplished this? He can do anything he imagines or sets his mind to, and the decision was made to confound the languages of the people so that they could not communicate and could not complete the building of the tower, and then they dispersed in their individual language groups to various other geographical places.
Now, in none of these, we don't know how we're getting this information. And of course, I know for the people, so, well, the Bible's divine, so it was just put, you know.
Right.
We don't know how any of these received the scenes that they were saying were happening in heaven behind these. And these are just about three instances in the entire Bible where this pattern's used. And we got to keep in mind, this could just be an explanation in the mind of the writer. Mm-hmm. This has to be happening. But let's go back to the book of Job as a divine, as you know, all this is taken. We're talking about the devil and we're talking about Satan and the Lord basically bargaining over the future of Job, like he's a pawn. It makes him look, and we go through that whole story there and think, well, Job's just a pawn then. He's not even, you know.
It kind of makes you feel a little worthless in the grand scheme of things.
He's done everything right. He's pleased God at every turn, or tried to. Yeah. And yet God is saying, yeah, go ahead. Test him. Do what you will. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay with me.
Don't kill him, but you can do everything else.
Yeah.
And I think it was at first, don't take his health. Don't touch him personally. And then it went on to, okay. But remember, excuse me, did Job, does whoever told this story and wrote it down, did they just add that part in there is imagining that's what must be happening? Or Job wouldn't be.
If it was truly a story, maybe they were just embellishing a little, well, making it a, you know.
Well, and that's a typical, because typically in the Hebrew works that we have, in the biblical works that we have, if it's a vision or something that was seen, it was, and I dreamt, and I opened my eyes and saw, I looked up and saw, I beheld.
Yeah.
There's usually something that tells you that you're entering into a peak in the divine realm, and these seem to just roll along in the story.
But anyway, when we're talking about the divine council, and we gave some other examples, kings and others in the divine council. Tracy, are you 11?
Am I number 11? I'm lost. These, like Job, are just a brief glimpse of the meetings that some writers describe to take place in heaven, with God presiding. Some folks have gone on a tangent with this bit of information and have tried to produce a whole doctrine about the council of God. But just as we have here in Job, there just really isn't enough information to know what's going on. The whole divine council thing demands one to ask, why does God need a council? Or if he doesn't need it, why does he want it? You know, why does he need the or want the input of a group of what we believe to be his own creation?
That's an interesting question.
Very.
Another take on this story is that all this could have been happening in Job's own mind. Think about it.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, all of these things of why they're happening. I mean, he's sitting and struggling. Why is this happening? Why is this? And remember, even the adversaries could be in his own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why is this all happening to you, Job? You've done everything right.
Right.
And now look what's happened. So anyway, it could have been his thinking process or just of why this was happening to him. It would lend to a spiritual explanation to an earthly event. And we do that a lot, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We want to put a spiritual, tornado comes, we want to throw a spiritual, no pun intended, we want to put a spiritual spin on it. Well, we just don't know. But if we were to learn the lesson intended for this in this story, we mustn't allow ourselves to get stuck trying to make sense of something we know so little about, or else we'll fall into the trap of Job talking about things we know nothing about. And who knows, maybe that's what he was talking about, that God scolded him. You don't know anything about what you're talking about.
Maybe.
So, all right. Because we know at this point in the story, Job hasn't figured out the lesson that he's supposed to figure out.
Right. Well, the best thing to do at this point is admit that we don't have enough details and move on with the story. Suffice it to say that the Lord apparently gives the go-ahead to strip Job of his children, possessions, and prosperity, and we won't dwell on the why. We're to assume that Job is not privy to the heavenly meeting, and since he is the main character that we are to identify with, we should interpret the story from his perspective. And that is that in a very short period, he loses everything: children, livestock, prosperity, and eventually his health. What we should focus on is that this is the very thing that Job was trying to avoid by carefully practicing his religion. Upon learning of his great loss is where Job gives us insight into his motivation for practicing his religion when he exclaims, in chapter 3, verse 25, that this loss is the very thing he had always feared would happen. What he dreaded has come true.
And this is usually a defining point in our lives. The point where we question our actions and motives, and if we're involved in organized religion, we really feel like we've been shorted and ask why when we suffer a loss just like everyone else. Regardless of our devotion to detail and precipitation. Let's try that again. Why we suffer a loss just like everyone else, regardless of our devotion to detail and participation. It doesn't seem fair. It brings us back to the age-old question of why do bad things happen to good people?
And do you think, I'm going to hold your point right there, your spot right there, but do you not think that's really what the book of Job, the overtone of the whole book of Job is?
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Good things happening to bad people. And we don't like that in the Christian. Are bad things happening to good people, or even good things happening to bad people?
We don't like either way.
We don't like that concept. We don't like to be presented with that concept in the Christian religion, or any religion, maybe, perhaps, I don't know.
Well, as hard as the Christian religion has tried, it's still never been able to adequately answer that question of why bad things happen to good people. And it may be because, like Job, our Christian religion has become about participating, about sacrificing our time and paying our tithes and offerings and attending services and a lot of other rituals that we've put into our faith to protect us from loss, sickness, and even death. Something the Christian religion implies and often outright claims to be able to do, but it clearly does not.
You know, the ones that claim it can do that, they seem to, and to reinforce this mindset, you'll see this preacher that has really prosperous and he does everything and everything seems in his life to go right. And he pretty well lives his life through without any real bumps. Of course, we have to take in consideration, he's very rich.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
True.
Okay. If we admit it, most of us, like Joe, believed we had an edge or advantage by practicing the organized Christian religion, yet we still suffered loss. I recall a question I was asked by an older preacher when I was just beginning in the ministry, and I preached a doctrine that really wasn't so much unlike what Joe believed. The preacher asked me concerning my claim that being a faithful follower of Christ made life all but trouble-free. And all we needed to do, this was probably kind of my standpoint, all we needed to do is ask and it was granted. But his question was, what do you do when you dot all the I's and you cross all the T's, but you still suffer loss? Now, I don't remember what my answer was, but I'm sure I had one. But it would be years later when I learned that this preacher who asked me this question had lost his loving wife to cancer at a very young age. I knew then what his question implied. It must have been the very dilemma that Job was wrestling with when his religion did not come through for him in a pinch. And now the amazing thing is I still know this guy and he's still preaching. He's preached for 40 years and pastored for 40 years. But I also know that underlying in him
is that question.
Yes, that question.
This question, and I'm curious if he varies away from that prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he pushes away from that prosperity type of preaching that.
Right.
It's possible.
Bad things don't happen to good people.
Okay. Now here we are in this story where Job is in the depths of his anguish, which is compounded by his disillusionment concerning the benefits of practicing his religion. If we are able to learn the lesson that this story teaches, this is a good place to ask ourselves a very serious question. Am I practicing my organized Christian religion as a means to know the nature and character of the Lord, or am I motivated by avoiding loss and suffering? Each of us has to face this question, either by asking it honestly now, or asking it when we suffer loss, as Job did. And I will say, if you're listening to this and you find yourself getting a little offended and a little kind of stepping back, try to take a breath, take a step back, because I did this. When I first heard about enlightenment and really just letting go of the organized religion and that maybe the way I'm doing it, maybe I was motivated by fear, because I think we kind of do it on a subconscious level sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, remember, the package is sold to us by fear.
It is. So you don't, I don't really think we always realize. But
it's all
you,
promoted by fear.
Let me save fear you of for loss. What I'm going to do to you.
But just take a step back. Really think about it. Give yourself an honest evaluation. And it might not be pretty and you might not be happy. But if you can work through those feelings and the journey is beginning.
Accept that it's okay to have those feelings.
Exactly.
And ask the questions, to pursue the questions. Not just say, well, because it's so easy just to lapse right back into our, okay, it's just easier to think
about. I still
find myself
sometimes
going
back.
It's easier just to think about it this one way and don't worry about why it don't make sense.
Take it on faith and move on. Well, most of the time, folks who are going through a period of disappointing loss will identify themselves as Job. We may even say, I feel like Job. But often, the Job that we're identifying with is the Job who suffers loss by means outside of our control, not the Job who is forced to question his motives for his religious service and devotion. We're now going to get some insight into the prosperity religion that Job was affiliated with. Notice how we slipped that prosperity religion in there? We get that insight over the next several chapters of dialogue that are the conversations between Job and his friends who come to visit him and, use the term loosely, comfort him in his crisis. But that's for the next episode. So until then, may the unconditional grace, peace, and love of the Most High be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible. Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.